outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, I think we made the decision this week, Kyle, to go all the way to Richmond, Virginia, on this trip.
You're doing it all the way to the East Coast, huh?
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it. You know, we just started. We go to Texas and then Mississippi, and then now we're there. And so just for those of you in the God Journey audience, if you're on a swing from Texas through Mississippi to Virginia or back through Kentucky and points west to get to Denver, we toyed with going to South Dakota, but it's going to depend on weather up there. So we got a lot of options to hang out with folks. So if folks want to connect with the tour, we don't got a name for it this year yet. It could be the Letters to the Bride tour or something.
Ooh, nice.
Or It's Time. It's Time. But anyway, just so you know, if you want to get in touch with us about stopping through somewhere where you might be, or you want to drive to us somewhere, we're driving a long way. So we're hoping I get these invites. Can you get 3 hours off the road? Could you come 3 hours down to the road since we've already driven X amount of miles? But we'll see.
Where at in South Dakota are you thinking?
Well, there's two people that have, two groups of folks that have invited us, one in Pear and one in Rapid City.
Okay.
But that's quite a bit north out of our way. And then we're not that far from you guys, but then we're a long way from Denver to get back to.
That's fair. That's fair. Would you hit Denver and then go on up to South Dakota?
No, we'd hit it on the way back probably.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Our thought is maybe next year we want to do the Pacific Northwest and Idaho mm-hmm. and Montana and Glacier. And so that more of a scenic trip than a visiting people trip.
Okay.
This time we'll catch spring. We'll drive through the tornadoes and the hailstorms and all that fun stuff as we work our way through the South. Trust Jesus to get us through all that.
Did you ever think that this would have come when you thought about, I'm going to get an RV? Like, did you ever think that you'd be touring across the country with your wife pulling a Jeep all over the place?
Not more than once.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we'd make a swing around the whole thing and then sell it and move on. But this is the way we can travel now because... Sarah doesn't want me to be gone from her, and she doesn't mm-hmm. want to travel as much as I fly to places and hung out with people and lived in people's yeah. homes. She likes having her own space. So this is the way I can hang out with people. We can do it together and still have our pups with us. And there's nothing really keeping us here. So we don't have to stay here. Yeah. We can be gone months at a time. So Sarah's kind of thinking, why don't we take 3 months and make a loop and come back sometime late June?
Nice.
See where we end up. So,
okay.
And I like the windblown feeling of it. I like that we'll just leave and we'll get there. And then we may try and get there. We'll work on it, but we may not. It's a great way to be. It's fun just for Sarah and I to be contained in that space and have our dogs with us and a new puppy. So we'll see how that goes. And just enjoy the context God gives us with people on the way.
I love that.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome back to the God Journey.
Best thing that you heard this week, Wayne?
You know, it'd take me a long time to read it. It's not a short little pithy statement, actually. It's an email from a friend. And he wrote it in response to something I wrote on my blog. This is what I wrote. Knowing we're loved as a belief will only take us so far. It's living in that love that opens up a lifelong adventure that will hold you through any storm, give you direction in every circumstance, and tenderize your heart from the inside so you can love others without having to try. That's what I wrote. His response, and I've met Kevin. He's from Canada, Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this back to me, and I loved it. It's just a great snapshot of what I think is a worthy journey. He said, well, I was a religious person/teacher who sold the idea that I was not in a religion, but in a relationship. I had no idea then how far away I was from living by his spirit. I lived by good doctrine theology, attempted good morality, good communication, and good habits. I taught and encouraged people to memorize scripture. 1 Corinthians 13, memorized, should bring about good love habits, should it not? It did. I was a wonderful poser and had everyone convinced I was legit. But for that something inside that had no peace by being morally superior, I now realize what the enemy is to living in the spirit. It is all those things that I listed above. I hate to say it, but the truth about living with a heart of love worship truly is found when the music fades, theology, doctrine, morality, positive thinking, good habits are stripped away or ripped away When the agenda's gone, the plan gone, good ideas gone, and we are stripped bare right down to our ugly, insecure reality, this is where we finally see the necessary contrast. The lines and truth no longer blurred, the layers of hurts and habits and reaction pried away one layer at a time. This is the ugly, wonderful place where the Spirit introduces us to love and freedom, which are beautifully and naturally linked. It's not cute. It's not even a little bit pretty. But it's real, and this is where the Spirit raises us from the ashes into the new creatures we have read is possible. Now, with no agenda, I know anything is possible. Ask for nothing, and yet in my perfect imperfection, I now know I have everything.
Hmm.
I've been with this guy on parts of his journey, and I knew him well at the beginning part of this that he was talking about, and had a great weekend with him and his family, had a fun time. And to see where that's kind of all taken him on this journey of really finding what the reality is inside of Christ, and even to call himself a poser. Weren't we all that? Oh my gosh. Oh my Weren't gosh. We all that? And to even come, it's not cute. It's not even pretty a little bit, but it's real. And to me, that's what we crave. That's what I crave. I crave reality. I crave this wonderful journey in Jesus that we read about. It's supposed to be real. And my goodness, I've spent most of my life finding out where that reality is instead of trying to just make it happen on the outside and make it look like it's working and then to find a way into something that's more real. So it made my heart happy to read that, to know this guy's journey and know all this is very real in his heart.
I love that. The thought came to my mind in regards to excruciatingly beautiful and that phrase that we've talked about in the past when he was talking about something ugly. What was the phrase?
The ugly, wonderful place.
Ugly, wonderful place. That, man, that just encapsulates it so well because it is a wonderful place. There is healing. There's life to be found. There's restoration to be found there, but it's definitely not pretty. It can be a hot mess at times, like an absolute disaster, but it's where life is to be found too, though, isn't it?
It is. And it's hard to imagine when I think about 2 years ago, we're coming up on the anniversary of my coming home to a great surprise and Sarah not being here, but what it has renewed in our marriage. I've got about 3-4 close friends that are going through the end of their marriages and either one partner or another wanted to check out or both. And one couple said to me this week, we just grew apart. There was nothing we cared about with each other, nothing we shared together in common after living together multiple decades. And boy, that makes my heart sad. And I know what we went through was an ugly time, ugly for Sarah, ugly for me. But what it has renewed in us, I would say ugly, wonderful. It really, now looking back, every bit of it, my goodness, I wouldn't have traded any of it to have the life that we have now. I wouldn't want to go through it again, quite honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it reset so much of Sarah and I. It's like a new marriage that has 48 years of history. And it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I get it. I get when we really ask God to help us get to what's real and help us and to disillusion us from all the illusions we hold things together, and poke holes in those illusions that most of us don't like when he does it because it's the ugly part we focus on and it's the hurting part and it's hard. Even my friends going through divorce, I know God has stuff for them on the other side. It's not, oh, this is the end of my life. I couldn't make this marriage work or we couldn't or whatever. Instead of, no, God's still God and he still works beauty out of tragedy. And it may not be the result we want, but he still gets glorified in our lives as we keep leaning into that space that craves the real more than we crave the comforting.
I think that's why the ugly, beautiful or ugly, wonderful definitely resonated with me because I feel like Jess and I are definitely navigating a season like that too. She's going through some her own trauma stuff and me as her husband sorting out and it activating things in my life. And so me going and getting my own help and getting some resources and pressing harder into my community in some of those regards. But man, it just, I wonder, I'm really excited and I'm very hopeful for what God has for Jess and I, but it's hard. It is brutally painful when you're watching your spouse go through something that you don't have a lot of control over, but it's deeply impacting them. It's hurting them. It's just a ugly, wonderful process that they're going through. And man, I think for me, one of the big things is leaning into, Lord, I feel so powerless here. Like what is your invitation to rest, love, and play look like when I don't have a lot of control here, or when I don't have a lot of influence on where it goes? And, you know, for Jess and I, one of the things that I'm finding is like, I need to press into my own work. Like as I'm working through some residual things that I haven't worked through that are coming up as a result of this, like, no, my gift to my wife is to do the hard work on my side as well, so that as she's getting freed up, I'm a safer, healthier space for her to land as she's becoming more free too. And that's, man, it's not an easy process. It is tough to work through that.
It's not, but that's where the real things lie. You know,
yes.
To be able to say, gosh, I wish we never had to hurt. I wish we could just go from blessing to blessing and from glory to glory in that kind of external sense, instead of, no, if Sarah hadn't hurt deeply, she wouldn't find her way to wholeness. And it's through that pain, and it's through figuring out how as a couple we share it together, and how does God lead us through it, that without having an honest appreciation for and God's intervention in the pain, then we'll just spend the rest of our life managing that pain, managing our way around it and trying to find that comfortable, secure way to live, instead of, no, healing, when we invite healing, it's no holes barred, man. I mean, we've got to get to what the reality is. And for humans who prefer comfort, that's always a challenge. I'm hopeful that what you guys are going through is going to lead to some real beauty for both of you, because but this is what it takes. There's no way to cut this off. Like Sarah got hurt way back there somewhere, and it'd be nice if it just went away, but it doesn't go away. It's got to rise, be appreciated for what it is, and then find the way through that. And some discussion on our last podcast, because we talked about that dream Lewis had about coming to that place where I could pray, even if it was without me, I want your joy. I want Sarah to find the fullness of your joy. That there's somewhere, I think, as I was talking to someone else about that this week, there's some place, I think, in most of our circumstances, it's kind of that Gethsemane prayer. It's not, okay, fix me, get me out of this, bail me out, you know, make everything pretty, send 10,000 angels. It's the Gethsemane prayer really gets down to, okay, it can't be what I want. It's got to be what you want. And the level of trust it takes to make that prayer. I mean, I talk about that prayer with some people. And you just watch them going, I don't trust God near enough to say that, because I think God, I don't know a kind, compassionate God. And so I'm afraid of what God would ask me to do. I'm afraid what God would let happen if I gave him one of those, whatever it takes, God, I want to find your reality. And I understand that, because if you think God's just mean and I'm going to heal you just because I have to make you sanctified or whatever, then you're not going to find that space. But when you really know that this Father, he really loves you, and he's not going to take you through anything painful that he doesn't have to. It's not an option. It's like, that's what Jesus is saying. If there's another way to do this, I want another option. And man, how many times have I prayed that prayer? God, give me another option. What else can we do here? And it's not usually just the prayer of, this is what we were talking about, what I thought would just open my eyes to some things. It's not just that we say, oh God, not as I will, but as you will. How many times have we tacked that onto a prayer request? Mm. It's never that direct. There's something in it where you lay down what it is that you're trying to force to happen, to surrender to God's way of letting wholeness, healing, freedom, transformation come. And I'm sure it's different for all of us in any situation. For me to think that Jesus in a dream identified that moment, which didn't come out of, okay, this will fix this situation, that was the most painful thing I prayed. God, if Sarah can only know my joy without you, without me, then let her have it. I'll give that up for her. And if I can't be her friend up close, I'll be a friend from afar. And I mean, I meant that stuff, but that was the most hurtful stuff I've ever prayed. That's right down to the core of it.
And I guess that would be my follow-up question to that is, how would you respond, or how do you help those navigate it where free will is involved, right? So there's Father's love, there's Father's heart for us, there's the kingdom life that there's to be found, but then there's also his incredible defense of free will. And at times, I mean, honestly, the frustration, like me venting, like in some at times of me venting and being like, Lord, your will is being thwarted right now. Like, how do I I don't think this is your kingdom. I don't think this is your life. And yet it's being thwarted. And yet that's not what's being chosen, or that's not where we're going right now, or that's not what we're experiencing. And I know I can trust you, Father. And yet it feels like even you are being restricted or being thwarted, or your will, your goodwill for me is being held back because of free will, or because of the choices of others or that others are making. So how would you respond, especially to, you know, people who are navigating that and say their marriages don't go the way that you and Sarah went? And it's like, okay, Lord, what is your will being, is your goodwill being thwarted here? Like, what is your heart for us in this, Father? What does that look like as there's the Father's heart is in the midst of it, but then there's our heart, and then there's the other members who are in that context that also have free will, that also have the ability to make a decision, whether that's whatever that might look like, they're able to make a decision. And God doesn't force himself on them to distort that decision or change that decision.
No, that's exactly what's difficult about living in the world we live in. That God's will revolves around the will of other people in our lives. Mm. So the pain that I went through with Sarah to healing is beautiful. The pain I went through with my father, not to healing in this life, but to a different kind of healing. I know we'll sit down one day and everything's going to be clear in a way that's going to be wonderful, wonderfully rewarding, I think. Mm. So to me, I never look at the will of another person thwarts God's will for me.
Mm, interesting. Okay.
It may change it. It may say, okay, it was a will that Sarah and I be married for life. We said we would do that. She didn't know at the time. Trauma was there. It emerges. She, to save her life, she runs. If she never comes back, would my life change? Yeah, absolutely, it would change. It would have changed drastically. Would God still have been in that? Would that pain, what I pray now when I pray for the world out of the pain that I went through with Sarah and my dad?
Yeah.
Man, if Sarah never came back, and that's the space God had invited me into, to let that pain connect me to his pain and his passion for the world. And now, I mean, I spent some time this morning, I had some busy work I was trying to get done before we podcasted, and I just had that inkling of, God's here for you. And so I paused and I just pulled back, and this thing unfolds in a way that's just so beautiful and sacred and tender. And I really say, you know, if Sarah wasn't in the picture, I could live with that. Now, I'm glad I have both. You know, I'm glad Sarah's will was able somehow to bend to God's desire for her. And that's what I've said about Sarah's courage to keep going deep. She keeps going. And that's happening as late as last week, still going to the deep places to find this beautiful healing that God, this ugly wonderful that God's providing out of her heart. I don't ever think we get thwarted. I think God's will's constantly in flux. It's not a linear path, and boy, we all got to stay on it or we all lose. It's here until that roadblock, then it's over there until it hits another roadblock. And then God's navigating me through a world in which my will is not the one that determines my life. In fact, as I've gotten older and older, I find I have less control because I take less control. I used to be a bit of a control freak. I could kind of manipulate people to bend to my will or work on them pretty hard or whatever. I don't now. I'm willing to be your victim. So if this is what you want from me, Dad, then I will give you that. It's not my choice. I don't want to. Yeah. I want more. I find there's great freedom in that. There's great freedom not to be the one trying to control the outcome of events. Remember we said 2 weeks ago about if your identity is hooked to the outcome of some situation, you will not be helpful in it.
Yes.
And I think that is so true. I think that's the Gethsemane prayer. Jesus has to get out of the way of what he needs out of this, which is, I don't want to go through the cross thing. I really don't. Let's find another way. There is no other way. Okay, then not what I will, what you will. And that's not just some cute little prayer prayed because we all know that's the right prayer to pray. That was in the face of a choice. He bent his will to the Father. It was still his choice. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a victim of the cross, didn't have to go through it.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of this. Yes, people make decisions that victimize me, that change the course of my life. But God has an endless set of options to say, okay, well, you couldn't control that. So here we are. So now why don't we go this way? And what it will do in you, I think Kevin's letter kind of gets to that. Mm. What we don't see here, we see this beautiful transformation. I've had enough exchanges with Kevin over the last few years since I was up there that I know this has come through great pain. And people read, oh, that's beautiful. No, it's been through great pain. The beauty at the end is beautiful. When people look at things in my life that we talk about that have really come around and I think really rotate well into God's life, what people don't see, although we're talking about it better now, but what they haven't seen oftentimes is the pain of that part of the journey.
Yeah.
That's why I want to sit with people and say, don't be afraid of the pain. Yes, you don't control the outcome. That's a good thing. And even if you have the best thing in mind and other people's will doesn't allow that to happen, God still has a process for you that's incredibly outstanding. And it will invite you, the pain you go through will invite you to deeper places of connection. The fellowship and the sufferings. I used to think that meant God just hurts with me when I hurt. And now I know, oh my gosh, there's a whole world in there. It's like a quarter of the kingdom of God forest I wander in that I've never been in any, I've skirted the edges a couple of times, but going, I don't know what's in there. I don't want to go. I like the lake over there. And now I just, my regret is it took this long to get there. Mm. I had other painful things in my life, not just Sarah leaving, the first betrayal by my friend. And I've had other dark places where I could have learned this, but I don't think I trusted God enough to go there.
Yeah.
Committed to, but not really. Not really when the chips were down, saving my life was more important than yielding to God's glory. I was going to say, even that's a painful word. I used that with someone the other day and they went back and said, "I, you know, God's glory just sounds like he wants to use me so he looks good." And I go, oh my gosh, to me, God's glory is all that he is and all that he desires gets to be manifest inside the creation. That's God's glory. There's nothing manipulative about it, but religious talk has even robbed that word from us, from being...
Yeah.
Man, to be part of God's glory is not being used by God so he can look good. Mm. God's glory is giving me the fullness of himself so that I can find life in him. And that, to me, that's what Sarah and I do when we do it well, is we share our glory with the other. And there's no point at being used by that or exploited by it.
I was reading in Mark the other day in the Message, and this verse came out in that regard of, you are my son, chosen and marked by my love, the pride of my life. Jeez. That's
beautiful.
To have that spoken like over, like, it's like, oh, okay. If that's what you mean by glory, like I'm in. Like,
yeah,
that's
me too. Like,
oh, I'm down with that.
And Jesus paid a huge price for that.
Yeah, he did.
But because he knew it was true, he could. It's not the other way around. It's not, well, go through it and then you'll know. No, the whole idea of the identity that we talked about, of God showing you that you're a beloved son or daughter of a gracious father, that will walk with you through stuff. It will. When you know that you're the treasure of his heart, then you're not going to worry about him exploiting that.
Yeah. Marked by my love, the pride of my life. That's not somebody who is
so beautiful,
using and manipulating you and taking advantage of you. That's no, not at all. And yet it takes me into this. I have been wrestling with this question for over 2 weeks now, and it falls into the best thing that I heard this week, that it's like the best thing, but it's also a tormentor for sure.
Okay.
And it's the simple question of, I got posed by a friend the question of, Kyle, what do you want? And I was like, okay, like, and it had this, like, I've heard people say that to me multiple times in the past, you know, whatever, but there was just this, there was this flavor, this texture to it of like an invitation from Father of, no, I want you to sit here for a little while. Like, don't just give me a curt answer. Don't give me a quick response. Like, I want you to sit here for a little while with this.
What do you want? In what way? Is it what do you want for dinner? What do you want for a house? What do you want? What do you want?
It was literally just that question. That's why, really? I felt like this invitation of just sit there with it. Like, what do you want? Just sit there with it. And then it manifested into Jesus's question of, what do you want me to do for you? And that was like, what? And that took me into a conversation about how I see and how I trust Father's heart. Because that, like, the idea of, like, literally my cop-out self was, well, obviously, Father, I have no idea what I want, so why don't you tell me? It's so not healthy, not helpful. But that's like the cop-out response, right? Of like, well, not thy will, not my will, but thy will be done. You know, like, that's what, it's like, oh no, I don't know what I want, so you just tell me, you fill me in. And yet, I think back and I was reading through the different passages where Jesus posed that question to people, what do you want me to do for you? And initially I was like, how did they not know? Like, you, like, they're lame or they're blind or they have leprosy, you know? And it's like, duh, God. Like
I want to
obviously.
See.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I mean, and yet, as I have sit and wrestled with that question for the last 2 weeks, it has burrowed and burrowed and burrowed deeper into my heart of like, okay, what do I actually believe about Jesus's heart, about Father's heart? And one of the honest, like, laments as I was processing through this is like, Lord, I hesitate to hope because I know that even in your best intent, that your will might not come to pass in this age, or it might not come to pass in the way that I imagine it, or, you know, it wasn't that I didn't trust him, and it wasn't that I haven't experienced his love in a deep and transformationally profound way. But it was like the idea of, what do you want me to do for you? It went down into the question of, who do you believe I am? Right? Like, that was the question that it was actually getting at, was what do you believe about my heart? Who do you believe I am? Because that's going to inform what you ask for. That's going to inform how you respond. Because if I was the blind person that Jesus asked, what do you want me to do for you? Would I have responded, I want my sight, Lord? Or would I have responded with something else? If I was the person who was lame and couldn't get up and walk, would I would have said, I want you to heal me so that I can walk? But even then, I love Jesus's response here, where he says, is it easier for me to tell him to get up and walk? Or is it easier for me to set him free from his sins? To set him free. And that's, like, I think about that, especially in the context of sin is trauma. Oh my gosh. Like, in the context of sin is trauma, like, I'm thinking about this and I'm like, would I rather walk? Or would I rather be completely released of all the wound, like the trauma and wounds that have been in my life? Would I rather be able to physically walk or have my heart be completely free?
Even if I never walked again.
Correct. Even if I never walked again. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And man, that takes it. It takes it into a different space. It takes it into man, I've been wrestling with that.
It is, because when you first started telling me, what do you want? You're blind. My thought is, well, if you've been to too many Bible studies, you might say, I really want to walk again, but I know I should ask for wisdom like Solomon did. I know I need to do something like that, because that's the prayer God will answer, and not the one about me winning the lottery or me walking again or me doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I love that conversation, because if God asks us, what do you want? And I'm exploring that. There's things that we would want immediately if we could get away with it, But saying some things out loud just sound as selfish as they are.
Yeah.
They just always go, okay, that's not really it. I mean, yeah, I do, but no, I don't. And it's not real. And drilling down, that's great. And then who do you imagine me to be? Am I in your life to make you miserable? Or am I in your life to bring you wholeness, which will bring you joy, which will bring you freedom, which will bring you all those beautiful things? But the process of getting there may be a little more painful than you want.
Maybe a little more ugly, wonderful than you had expected it to be.
Yes, I like beautiful, wonderful, not ugly, wonderful. Yes, and that's what we're afraid of, I think.
Yeah.
We're really afraid that God's hand, particularly if we in our flesh, gravitate toward comfort and ease. Mm. And healing lies through reality. And because we've deluded ourselves for so long about so many things, so many illusions we've lived under, when God starts unmasking the illusions that comfort us, how can that not be anything but disturbing? Mm-hmm. How can that not be anything but ugly?
Yeah.
And yet it's through the ugliness of seeing our own fallacious reasoning, our own indulgent desires, and getting down to the core of what it would mean to really be free.
Seeing that, so I think it's hilarious because God and I actually talked about Solomon and his decision for wisdom, right? Well, so we literally talked about that, and I was like processing with God, and I was like, I actually think he chose wrong, because if he had chosen for heart freedom, if you would have chosen, Lord, set me free, would that have released the wisdom into his life? In addition to, do you need that many wives and concubines? Do you need, you know, like some of the other things that he did that drastically distorted his leadership in the kingdom? But if
do you need that many palaces and barns for horses?
Oh yeah, gosh. Exactly. Like, so if his request had been,
that's good,
set me free, I want to be wholehearted, what would his kingdom have looked like versus wisdom? And would that have been, would freedom, wholehearted freedom, been the better choice than even wisdom?
Hmm. So what you're saying is Solomon got it wrong. That's really good Bible interpretation there, Kyle. But if I was sitting here today choosing, I would choose wholeheartedness over wisdom any day, but it may have seemed more selfish. Wisdom to rule your people well. That's, he wanted to rule well, but it cost him everything.
It did.
Because God kept warning you, you manage people, it's going to twist you up in ways you can't even imagine.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt you and the people you are trying to rule. Yeah, I think maybe, that's the first person I've ever heard say, you know, Solomon might have got it wrong. I think that's hilarious. He might have.
And yet I think about it, and even the follow-up question that I had as I was processing it was, would Solomon still have been king if he would have been wholehearted? Like if God would have granted, if he would have said, no, I want to be free, and I want to be free into a wholehearted, freed into a wholehearted life, would he have been able to remain as king? Would he have been able to remain in a position of leadership and authority that he was in, if God would have granted that prayer versus, I want the wisdom to be able to rule my people? I don't know.
I don't know either. Now we're into hypotheticals.
I know. Now we're into hypotheticals. But I think for me, like, that was the, as I was drilling down into it, and there was like all these, I mean, I've really been wrestling with this. Like, I'm talking like, I'm at page 14, I think, of like, every morning meditating
in your journal.
Yeah.
Not a book.
In my journals. Journal. No, in my journals.
And that's how you have this. You talk about conversing with God. You mostly have it by journaling.
Yes.
You kind of, his thoughts kind of make sense in your thoughts, and you're kind of sorting that out together.
Yeah. I literally write in my journal, the way I journal, it's like a transcript of a conversation. And if there's a nudge, or if there's an inclination or a thought, I'll just write it down. And if it's something that's mine, then I use, like, if I know it's more from me, I put a dash beside it. And if it's more of a thought that I'm like, hold on, I think that's, I didn't come that's from better me. Than me. That's better than me.
That's better than me.
A star goes beside it to circle back to it and be like, okay. Beautiful. Like,
so you got 14 pages already.
So I like, because I've been meditating about this every single morning and the different reiterations of what do I want and what I, and you know, like the first round, for example, was I want to be a safe and loving landing space for my daughters and my wife. I want to continue to live in a space that has close access to nature and the mountains. I want to continue to grow in my understanding and delight of who God is and who God is to me. And so that was like, that was the first iteration. And then after multiple days of really holding on to this question, like if God was to ask me, Kyle, what do you want me to do for you? My response would be, set me and my family free. I want wholehearted life for my daughters, my wife, and I. And from there, allowing that to be whatever the iteration of the kingdom in the world that it needs to be in its wholehearted expression. And I don't think we'll ever reach that in this age. I think we're still looking through that in a glass. A non-clear, non-perfect vision 2020 glass by any means. But man, to be like, as I've drilled down and drilled down and drilled down, it's like, Lord, I want my wife and I and my daughters to be wholehearted. That's what I want. If you can do something, if you want to do something for me, that's what I want you to do. And yet I think about it and it's like, okay, isn't that what he offers? Right? Like, isn't that what his, isn't that the good news that he offers?
Wouldn't that be binding up the brokenhearted is to make you wholehearted? It yes. would be. And maybe we won't get to wholehearted in this life, but what we can have is today, I can be on the journey to wholeheartedness. I can yes. be in what section of the journey I need to be in that tends toward wholeness.
Yeah.
Instead of being on the part of my journey that's medicating my pain and indulging my desires in more fleshy ways and missing out on the journey to wholeheartedness. Because the journey to wholeheartedness, particularly alongside Jesus and his Father, that's a very intentional journey.
It is. And it's one that I feel like we have to keep. It's almost like in my mind, it's almost like a marriage where I have to keep circling back to it and recommitting myself to it. It's like, okay, no, this is another iteration. This is another season. I'm recommitting myself to the vows, to the commitment, to the expression that I want to be intentional in this. I want to recircle or realign myself with that intentionality. And what does that look like? And it's been different. I mean, looking back over my life and the different seasons where I've committed and said, yes, Lord, my life is yours. Like, make me, you know, your will be done in my life. And yet there's been so many different iterations of that and expressions of that as I circle back and realign and remember those covenants, remember those vows that were made, remember those dedications that were made. And yet, man, it's interesting how that continues to unfold as we walk with him.
And it would be good to re-mention at this point, because we talk about it being an intentional journey to wholeheartedness, there being a lot of pain in that time of that journey and exposing the illusions that we've lived under. It'd be real important to come back and say, but we go on that intentional walk through love, rest, and play, not through yes. desperation, intensity, and performance,
yes.
which is how we would tend to do it ourselves.
Yes.
So it's how do I come to rest in his love, and how do I come to trust his work in me instead of my work for me? And how do I stay playful with a God? And Sarah and I have kind of experienced that inside her trauma healing things. We talk about, okay, very painful memory, stuff going on. And then I'll say something or we'll do something that just caused her to belly laugh in the middle of some deep thing. And it kind of backs us out a little bit from saying, let's not take ourselves too seriously here.
Yeah.
God's playing with us in the real things of life that lead to wholeness. So the ugly is the trauma. The wonderful, I think, is the playfulness of God, who's even in our darkest bit. And I love that about, you know, some of the movies like Indiana Jones and those kind of things, where the directors know you ramp up the tension of the audience and you just can't keep wrapping them up for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So you got to have some really ridiculous, humorous thing that comes in. Everybody gets a breath. I think God does that masterfully. And more than just some joke character here and there, he really has a playfulness in him that keeps us from diving too deeply into our taking ourselves too seriously, so that we begin to think that we're the ones that make the difference here instead of, no, I'm just a willing heart to God, and I'm looking for what he's showing me so that I can lean into that space with him, but I'm not the one that's going to white knuckle my way into wholeheartedness. Yeah. That's what people have to know.
Yes.
Because you can't.
No, and I love that. I love the image. Just the other night, Jess and I were going through some intense things, and I think she threw something at me, and I was like kind of being, and it was like it was something soft, and it wasn't hard, you know, and it wasn't in anger. And like, I look up.
Good. I'm glad you clarified that.
Yes. I look up in like annoyance, and she looks back and she just kind of grins, and she's like, we still need to be playful. And that was like, and it was so cool because we were in like in the midst of a pretty intense, pretty deep, very pain saturated conversation. And yet it was like, no, we still need to play together. We still need to be playful. We need to not take it so serious. And so now like there's this, it's kind of like a inside joke that we both will just be like, I'm just joking with you. And it's like that no, we're, don't take it too serious. I'm not meaning it to be serious. I'm meaning it to realign in playfulness and in rest and in love. And man, that, especially in the ugly part, if you can't laugh and be playful in the ugly, it's very easy to get burnt out in the ugly.
Again, it's too easy to trust that we'll white knuckle our way to a solution.
Yes.
We see that with our little Mandy. We're going through the teenage years with the new pup. And man, she's got I could say rebellious streak, but she's fiercely independent about something. She wants what she wants, and she doesn't care if you're in her way. And it always helped me. We're doing the discipline thing of helping her bend to our will. She is a dog, for Pete's sakes. Mm-hmm. But to do that, you do it best when you play with her. Mm. I mean, yeah, you've got to say no sometimes, but then distract her with play and she won't go back to the thing that you were having a problem with. But if you sit there and keep defying her, don't touch that, and she's sitting right next to it, she's gonna.
Yep.
And you're just setting her up for failure. And so even in something like that, I think I see God's playfulness with me, even in the darkest moments of my life, not only being good comedic relief, it is that. Some of this vision somebody the day, I saw some character, it looked like Captain Crunch, and but it just made me laugh. I'm wondering, why would that be there? I think God has this amazing way to just reset. Mm-hmm. It's like Jess was trying to do, toss something at you and just reset what's going on here. Because we can get too intense and we're drilling down too deep. And any relationship that is all work and no play, you won't stay in it long.
No.
You just can't. And you won't find your way to wholeness either, because it's too serious and too filled with pain. And we're always trying to negotiate the miscommunications or whatever. And yeah, we got to find our way back to playfulness. Mm. Certainly with him and with each other.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.